Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's just some guy with some dip in his mouth. It's David Ramil.
I won't swallow it, so I'll be available for the start of the season.
We don't need you throwing up on charter planes or anything like that. So, the basketball season starts tomorrow, which is
amazing.
That's what
I hear. Yeah, yeah.
This offseason seems a lot longer than the other ones. Am I alone in that?
Yes. No, I don't know that you're necessarily alone, but I don't share in that. For whatever reason, I feel like this was a shorter one to me. Like last season, I know that I'm talking about the 2013-14 season. That one seemed a lot longer for some reason. Just the whole gap in between the summer and then the LeBron thing and not knowing what the hell was going on. Something about this offseason has felt shorter to me. And I don't know if it's that I'm trying to cover the NBA in general and kind of somewhat detached and seeing what was going on and everything else like that, but it felt like there was more taking place. Maybe it was also that I went to summer league, so it kind of filled the gap a little bit with basketball. So maybe it's just a personal experience. But I've heard a lot of people say that it's felt longer. But
technically, it was longer for Heat fans because we weren't in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And we had like 3 months of just banging our head against the wall thinking about the NBA draft.
Well. Yeah, but even that fills the gap a little bit. You know what I'm saying? You've got the draft, which years before you haven't really cared about. And then there's the buzz about, whether or not Dwayne Wade's going to sign elsewhere and whether or not Chris Bosh is going to be healthy. And is Goran Dragic going to stick around? Or are we going to trade Lou Alden, et cetera? So there were enough Heat storylines throughout the summer to keep it interesting. But you're right. It doesn't matter anymore. Who cares? The point is the season is upon us and it's going to be a what season for the Miami Heat.
You want to just have our season predictions right now? And then we'll just go from there?
Absolutely, because we have no idea what's going to happen.
You know what? It really doesn't matter. I think one of the themes for people that listen to this show, the themes of this podcast is we like to talk about how predictions don't matter and then make them anyway, right?
Absolutely. That's our hallmark. That's what we do.
Okay, so I'm just going to tell you my prediction for the season. I think they win 47 games.
That seems fair.
I think the over-under for Vegas is 47.5. So I actually have them on the under.
Well, yeah, technically. That's a pretty solid bet. You know what? I'm finding myself now completely unprepared for this question because I flip-flop like maybe 100 times a day on it.
Ask me in 15 minutes. I'll tell you 52 wins.
And in 20 minutes, maybe they'll win 35. I mean, you never really know. There's so much range on this team, and I know we've talked about it in other podcasts, and we're going to probably talk about it more throughout the rest of the season, but the ceiling is so high, and then if injury and age and disharmony sets in, their floor is pretty low also. So it's a very interesting team in that regard, but I'm going to go a little higher. All right, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go a little higher and say that they're going to win 50 games.
I want them to win 50 games. What did we win? 38 games last year?
Yeah.
38 games. So basically I'm saying after, not being injured to the point where Michael Beasley is playing center.
Right.
Adding 4 really important bench players.
Okay.
Getting Bosh back for an entire season, Whiteside for a whole season, and Dragic for a whole season. I'm basically saying that this team is basically 9 wins better. So I'm probably wrong.
And that you think it's too low or you think it's too high?
I think I'm shooting too low.
It's
because,
I
assume all of those things, this team has got to be better than 9 wins better, right?
Right. I mean, Bosh for 41 more games than he played last year is going to be worth at least another 5 or 6 wins on his own, in my opinion. The combination of Dragic and Bosh and Dragic and Wade that's got to be worth a couple more wins. They showed really good chemistry towards the end of the season, and I think that's just going to continue to get better. He hasn't played with Bosch other than the preseason. I think that's going to be electrifying. It's going to work really well. That's got to be worth a couple wins. Whiteside getting better, maybe a little bit more, used to what he's got to do. You know, he's going to be worth a couple wins on his own. Overall, you're right. I mean, if you add up all those individual factors and not even taking into consideration the much more improved bench than what we had last season, no offense, Henry Williams, but I think Josh McRoberts is... I'm sorry, I didn't even remember his name. That's how bad it is. Walker.
Because I think you missed, because it used to be Bill Walker, and Bill is short for Williams, so I don't. Maybe that's where that got mixed
yes,
up.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. But the point being, I think Josh McRoberts is going to be a little bit better than Henry Walker, so...
Maybe a little bit. Yeah,
just a little bit, just a tad.
My main concern with this Heat team, and it's been the concern this whole preseason, is that the starters don't look good and the bench looks better, which is weird. And I think we're falling into this kind of, I don't know if it's a phase. I really hope it's a phase where just the starters need time to gel and they haven't, which right. is a concern in its own right, but they've played two games together in the preseason, and when we talk about a offensive unit or a starting unit that doesn't have one great offensive dominant player, right? Like, Wade can be that for a few minutes a game. Whiteside can be that, but we don't know if he really is that offensively. And Chris Bosh, it's just not in his nature to just be a one-on-one dominating player. Even though I do think he has ability, it's just not who, it's not the way he plays. So you have that, and then you have the lack of shooting. So the way that this team is going to score points is via chemistry, via ball movement and teamwork, and they just haven't had enough time to build that teamwork and chemistry together. So I do worry about that, but I also think that this team is so smart, and that's kind of its best attribute, that if a team is going to figure it out, it's going to be this team, especially with Eric Spoelstra coaching it. So I'm confident because I would never bet against Spo and Riley and Wade and Bosch and those guys, but it is a concern that this team just doesn't really fit. Like, it feels like there's a lot of really good parts, but all the parts don't make up the same thing. Like, we have parts of a really great car and a parts of some great iPhone, and you just throw them all together, and it's just like, well, what do we have? We don't really know. Some weird phone car thing, if that makes
okay.
sense.
Let's, no, it does. I mean, it's a good analogy, but at the same time, why is it that you think that the parts don't necessarily work well together? Is it because the floor spacing isn't adequate enough because of the lack of shooting? Is it because there's a duplication of skill sets?
It's that I think a lot of these players want to do different things. I think, and my main concern is Dragic and Wade. Yeah. I didn't realize how much of a concern it's going to be, but this is low-key, very LeBron Wade-esque, where they're kind of playing off of each other. They have to play together, but they also need the ball to do things. Like, as much as we all say that Wade playing off the ball is going to be better for him, he's never expressed that he really wants to be off the ball. Like, he likes having the ball.
Oh, and, no, without a doubt, yeah.
And even though, so from an outside perspective, we're like, oh, well, Wade playing off ball would be better because he's technically a shooting guard. Well, technically, no, he's a ball-dominant player. And that's really, like, at this point in Wade's career, he can do his best things with the ball in his hand. But the main thing is that Dragic is playing at, you know, he wants to play at 110 miles an hour, and Wade wants to just cruise along at 80. And right. that's not going to go away because Wade's stubborn. He's not going to, he physically can't play that pace for the amount of minutes, like the 33 minutes that Dragic is going to be on the floor. And Dragic can't slow down his game because he doesn't play that way. He needs to play fast. That's when he's at his best. And when he's not, and what we're seeing in the preseason, and people are upset with Dragic and his lack of production, well, we're seeing it because he's out of his element. He's not playing the way he needs to play, so he's not going to get the kind of production that we expect from him. And so he just becomes this kind of really high-priced facilitator, which is what he's been in the preseason. So that's my main concern, is how that backcourt's going to mesh. And it's going to be like Wade and LeBron trying to figure each other out. But it's just going to be kind of weird because they kind of play the same position now.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't remember there ever being that kind of, and I've used this word twice already, but this disharmony between Wade and LeBron. I mean, they were just so, they were at such heightened levels at that point when they first got together. They were so both so dominant, that even if there might have been a little bit of a conflict there, they were just blowing past people because of their superb athleticism. And you can't discount how good a passer LeBron is. Not to say that Dragic obviously isn't a great passer in his own right, but I don't know if it's necessarily the same level as LeBron is, you know, as far as overall playmaking ability.
Those two guys were just so talented, it didn't matter. But remember when Spo, like, that first year was kind of staggering their minutes, like having LeBron on the floor just so that he can do his own thing with the ball? Remember, like, that first year LeBron didn't really go into the post? He was more of a perimeter player like he was in Cleveland?
Right.
I think that's what we're going to see this year, at least, or maybe for the first half of the year, is just Spo's going to try it. Like, he's going to, like, when it comes down to it, he's a head coach, and I feel like basketball coaches have egos, and he's going to say, I can make this work. And maybe he can. I'm not saying he can't, but after a while, I think he's going to end up staggering their minutes so that Dragic might be playing more with those second-team guys, like McRoberts and Green, who and you know, with lineups with Bosch, too, that can play a little bit faster, and then Wade's going to be playing maybe with Chalmers or Tyler Johnson in the backcourt with guys like Whiteside and Dang, who maybe slow it down a little bit more.
And we did see some of that in that, I mean, when the Chalmers-led units were out there, they certainly seemed a lot more fluid than the starting unit, right?
Yes. Yep.
And you wonder why that is. I mean, you consider Goran Dragic so much more superb as a player, a point guard, et cetera, but yet there was just something to the way Chalmers kind of worked and was able to do his thing and find the guys in the perimeter. Maybe it was just all because that second unit, along with Josh McRoberts and Gerald Green, there's some very good passing there, not necessarily the same kind of need from your starters to be as ball dominant as they are, you know, with the Heat lineup and with Wade and Deng and Chris Bosh. So it's just it is a concern, but I don't know, maybe I'm just, you know, being positive or optimistic or whatever, but you look at the starters and all the incredible talent, the intelligence that you already pointed out, they've got to be productive, right? I mean, it's just got to work. I can't see how it wouldn't.
I agree with you, and that's why I think they end up winning like 47 to 50 games, but they're going to be good because the talent is there, but they could be better if the pieces fit better. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be enough to beat Cleveland or even like a team like the Wizards, or that's my concern. And a lot of it falls on Hassan Whiteside to see if because he's the ultimate, can clean up all of the bugs, right? He can just fix everything, because for all of the Miami's lack of shooting, if Whiteside's getting offensive rebounds and putbacks, it doesn't matter. They just got to get the ball near the rim and just let Whiteside fix it. Or, you know, the perimeter defense might be an issue in lineups where, like, let's say, well, in the starting unit with Dragic and Wade, if they're playing a John Wall, you know, or a Kyle Lowry, who's apparently lost weight and is super athletic this year and is blowing up, what did he score, 40 points in that preseason game or something? Like,
yeah, I think so.
Dragic is an average defender. Wade doesn't like playing defense. And if they're playing somebody like that, they're going to need Whiteside in the middle to be a superb rim protector to fix that. And then, you know, so you have those things. And let's say, you know, Spoelstra wants to play Gerald Green in for Luol Deng with the other four starters to increase the spacing of the floor. Then you have three lackluster perimeter defenders, and Whiteside's responsibility at the rim is going to be even, you know, more important. So he can fix it, but then we're talking about Whiteside being the ultimate fixer-upper, and he's just a big question mark right now. We don't really know how good he is, or if he's going to be consistent enough, or even in the game enough if he's not in foul trouble, to do all of those things. So I worry about that. But that said, Whiteside can be really, really good, and if he is playing really, really well, then this team's ceiling is, you know, winning the Eastern Conference, I think.
Did you notice in the preseason that they may have gone a little bit less on the whole screen and roll that we saw? You know, he was so effective in that last year. It seemed like they were going to that less, and they weren't like what we, well, you know, he flourished so much with like just catching lobs at the rim for big, you know, big stretches of last season, especially late in the season. Did you see them go less and less of that? Because that's what I noticed, at least in a couple of the games that I did see. It seemed like they were going less to just try and lob it into him or kind of draw that second defender to free him up at the rim, because he was just so effective at finishing at the rim. And part of that was because, again, they had a guy like Wade or somebody to draw that secondary defender off of him where he could just finish very easily at the rim. Did you see? Am I crazy in that assessment?
No, I made a note of that. I thought that they posted him up more though.
Yeah,
I thought like a higher percentage of the time, but that's why I kind of referenced maybe having lineups where Wade and Whiteside are playing together, because Wade kind of unleashed Whiteside. I felt like in that pick and roll situation, Wade didn't get enough credit for that last year, by the way. Basically, absolutely, freeing up everything that Whiteside did, because when they run that pick and roll, then Wade and they run it left where Wade is just so dangerous, everybody's going to always go to Wade, and that frees up Whiteside every single time, it seemed like. And then so you can have that pairing, that, you know, that guard big man pairing, and then you have the Dragic Bosch, which is much more functional, I think, in a pick and pop situation. If you have those two pairings, you just have one of those two on the floor at all the times, and, you know, sub in Josh McRoberts or Chris Anderson for a few minutes at a time for, you know, Bosch and Whiteside respectively, that could be dangerous in itself. Like, that will win. Those two things can win lots of games.
But you just have to hope that the starting unit doesn't fail to mesh, and then you have like a huge deficit that you can't come back from. I mean, you're right in that there could be certain lineups that Spo could use effectively and then kind of build some points and things of that sort. But what happens if that starting lineup really doesn't mesh very well, and then they just don't score as much as you would think that they would, and then all of a sudden you make that substitution pattern, you score a little bit more effectively, but by that point you've already got this huge deficit, and it's not the preseason, and you're going up against, you know, all-star caliber players with every team. Can you possibly come back from that? It's a huge concern, and it's something to think about as the season progresses. We don't know at this point, you know. And, you know, Chris Bosh made comments a couple days ago where he said, you know, unusually that he wants more preseason games. More players are kind of tired of the preseason. They just want to get it done. But he acknowledges, he's always been as honest as he can be, and said, look, we need more time. We're not ready at this point. So you have to take that into consideration and hope for the best.
Well, the other thing is that the season's 82 games long, so they can take like the first month and figure it out. But I think you're right. Like, we like to say it's not who you start with, it's the lineup that you finish with. But no, it kind of matters who you start with, because we saw in the preseason, like you just said, that they're getting off to slow starts and they're in deficits. And luckily, the second unit is playing like second and third units in its preseason, so nobody really gives a shit anyway. So right, they can come back. And if they don't win, we don't remember anyway, because we don't care, because it's the preseason. So, yeah, I think. But then you're dealing with a situation where, do you ask one of those guys to take a seat at the beginning of the game? Like, who do you? You can't ask Wade to come off the bench. That's not going to happen. You can't ask Dragic to come off the bench. We know that's not going to happen, because that was an issue in Phoenix, right, where he wasn't getting the playing time that he thought, or the role that he thought he deserved. That won't work, I don't think. Bosch, there's no point in bringing him off the bench. Whiteside's not going to come off the bench in a contract year. That seems like a situation that would blow up. Dang, like, what are you going to do? Sit Dang and then start who? Green? So that, you know, you have no defense to start games? Or, you know, Dang is, if anybody, he seems like the guy you would bench. But at the same time, like, if you start Winslow, that doesn't make a difference. Like, they're the same player basically right now. And he's the one guy in that starting unit that doesn't really need the ball. So if you were to, like, I've heard starting Gerald Green over Dang a lot. And the reason that's not going to work is because now you have five guys that need the ball at all times. And that's my problem with the starting unit, is that there's four guys that need the ball and that they're best with the ball. And maybe that works in, well, it will work if they're in a motion offense where they're moving the ball and everybody has their hand on the ball. Like, if four or five guys are touching the ball at any given point in an offensive possession, that works. Because at least they're touching the ball, and then they can say, okay, do I have the shot? Yes, take it. If I don't, move the ball along. That works. But I don't know. I just, this, the mechanics and the chemistry just, they kind of freak me out. And it's not my job to figure it out. It's Spoelstra's. But it's almost a good problem to have, is there's too many good guys on offense, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because what do you run? Do you run the pick and pop with Bosch and Dragic, or do you run the pick and roll with Wade and Whiteside, or which one do you do? I don't know.
Yeah, this is the tough part about analyzing that team, because I'm even now in the just, you know, few minutes that we've been talking already, my win projection seems to be much too high. Now I'm feeling kind of mid to late 30s as far as overall wins, and I don't know if that's right or wrong or anything like that. You just, But I, at the same time, there's part of me, and you know, Heat fans don't want to hear it. Fan bases of all the other 29 teams don't want to hear it. But there are problems with your team. I hate to break it to you. You know, every team has problems, and you have to admit it. You have to be a little unbiased at times. This team has issues. That now they can get past them. There's enough talent there, like we've talked about. There's enough time early in the season, in particular, where they have a little bit of a softer schedule, maybe, and they can kind of continue to develop that chemistry. They got a lot of home games early off so that they get more practices in place here. There's time, and maybe they'll continue to build towards the end of the season. But then the flip side of that is, you know, traditionally towards the end of the season, that's when older players, and you have a lot on this roster, tend to break down a little bit, have nagging injuries, maybe aren't as effective, etc. This isn't Dwayne Wade of 2008-2009 when he was at his peak. This is an older, smarter Wade, but maybe a little bit less healthy. No, not maybe. You know, definitely a little less healthy.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up because I have a prediction to make.
All right. Let's
hear it. There will be a point in this season, and it's going to be right around the 30 or 40 game mark. 30 game mark. Where Wade, quote unquote, rests a few games, and the Heat start Gerald Green in his place, and the team goes on a mini win streak.
Oof.
And we are going to start wondering. And those ideas, and it's going to happen on PTI, and it's going to be on Around the Horn, it's on ESPN, all the shows. It's like, are the Heat better off? And the Heat will be right hovering around 500. They'll be a little bit better than 500 at this point. Are the Heat better off bringing Wade off the bench? That's going to be a major talking point, like a national talking point, not just a fan pet idea that we've kind of had the last couple of years.
I mean, you're going to see their points per possession go up substantially, probably. You're going to see the pace of the game go up, a lot more shots per game.
And let's be honest, Gerald Green is not a worse defender than Wade right now. Like, if we're going to be completely honest, Gerald Green is a better fit for the starting unit than Dwayne Wade is.
That's interesting. I hadn't really considered that because for so long you tend to think of Wade as being a solid defender when he's engaged and when he's willing. And you tend to think of Gerald Green as being, you know, the exact opposite of that. But you're right. At this point, maybe Wade is just so much slower than he's used to being, than we're used to seeing him, that he could be as bad, as good a defender as Gerald Green. So that's a very interesting point. I hadn't considered that.
Well, I think when Wade is engaged, he's definitely better than Green, but he's not. That's his problem. He doesn't want to play defense. He didn't want to play defense all last year, or really the year before that, LeBron's last year. He didn't really want to play defense. And
well, you wonder, I mean, is it because he doesn't want to or because he can't? Because he knows that kind of exertion is going to take much too much out of him.
You're right, and I shouldn't word it. Like, we all love Dwayne Wade. He can do no wrong. So he's keeping his energy for offense, which is fine. It's where we need him to do things. But Gerald Green might not be – you know, might not have the defensive skills that Wade has or the recognition, but he's more eager right now because he knows he's playing for a contract right now, basically. And I think he's a more willing defender at this point than Wade. And when, you know, all is said and done, that kind of all evens out to being about the same, I think.
You know, you mentioned Gerald Green playing for a contract, and that's interesting because, you know, he's had somewhat of a journeyman career playing in Minnesota and Boston and New Jersey and Phoenix, etc. And now he's finally on this one-year deal here, but he's showing that he can score. But you talk to some of the guys that covered him in Phoenix, and they're not surprised by this. I mean, they thought he was who he is. And, you know, to paraphrase Danny Green from all those years ago, he's showing exactly what he's always been, a very potent scorer. There are going to be games where he's going to shoot you out of it, though. I mean, for all that Heat fans are in love with Gerald Green now, there are going to be times when he's going to go 2-for-13, 2-for-14, and you're going to be like, what the hell is this guy doing out on the floor? And that's just the nature of who Gerald is, which is great. Positive, electrifying at some points, and then head scratching and completely idiotic at others. And so you just kind of have to take that as far as following him and his career. And so you look at that, and I wonder if the contract year is going to be as much of a factor for him, because I don't know that he's going to get a long-term deal elsewhere. Because at this point in his career, he's been consistent, solid scorer, incredible leaper, still has that athleticism clearly. But he's not showing any kind of progress in any other area of his game. He's been a little bit better defensively, maybe, than he was over the last year, but we don't know if that's something consistent over the course of the season. So maybe the contract situation isn't going to be as important for him. For me, and I know you and I have talked about this before, the bigger question, I think, as far as contracts are concerned, are Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah.
I think that's the one where you really have to consider whether or not it's going to be a distraction for him. This is a player in his youth who hasn't clearly established himself yet. He's looking to make a name for himself, and that could be what provides the incredible dysfunction that could send his team into total chaos.
And I really don't like the way he's looked in the preseason. Like, he's played fine, but it just seems like he's always unhappy. He looks just mad or annoyed. Or annoyed. He looks annoyed, like, all the time. He's got, like, a scowl on his face. Like, he'll either get fouled or somebody will foul him, and he's just, like, pissed off. Like, I just don't like the attitude, and I'm not really, like, I'm not here to just, you know, make hot takes and, oh, he's got a bad attitude, this season's going to hell. But, like, that's not good. Like, we don't want to see that. Like, especially when his concern... Anybody else, it doesn't matter, but when it's Whiteside and his concern is maturity and always has been, then every little thing is kind of a concern. So I wasn't happy with the way he looked in the preseason. I don't know, maybe he's scowling because his ankle's still strained. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. And every time he just gets hit in the body, it just kind of re-aggravates his ankle a little bit. Maybe that's what it is, but...
Yeah,
It makes you question it, right? Like, nobody else would question it, but with him, you question it.
Yeah, and that's tough, and that's where you're going to have to rely on the kind of established veterans, particularly, in my opinion, Alonzo Mourning and Udonis Haslam. You know, Haslam's still player, and Mourning is not, but they're still going to be those kinds of guys that provide experienced voices to calm him down, to get him focused, because they're going to be difficult stretches there. And you know, he's set to make millions next year. It's just a matter of how many over what period of time. So he has to play at a high level. I think he understands that. Now, you question whether or not he's going to be all about getting his over the success of the team. That's a bigger concern because he hasn't cashed in yet. You know, this is a guy who last year, you know, was making nothing. He was out of the league and playing pickup games at the YMCA, as everybody knows. He's gotten, you know, signed for a very cheap deal here in Miami. They've gotten a good year, a half a year of production out of him. It's going to continue this year for a very cheap amount of money. So you wonder whether or not he's looking to cash in that big $10, $15 million a year contract, perhaps even more. And so you wonder how much of that is going to be an impact on the way he plays, whether or not he's going to start sulking, whether or not he's going to be complaining about not getting enough touches. These are all things that could possibly send this team, you know, completely derailed. And it's a growing concern. And you're right, though, in that, you know, you don't question any other player, but, you know, he's in a unique situation here in that this is his very first chance to prove himself with the goal of making an impression towards the future. Last year was all about, look, you have no idea who Hassan Whiteside is. Why not play well? It's unlike, you know, the comparison's always been made with Jeremy Lin. It was an unfair one probably because I think Hassan Whiteside's probably a little bit more sustainable of a talent. It's not the New York City market. But Lin parlayed his success immediately. You know, what if Hassan Whiteside had become a free agent at the end of that season, just this past season? How much money would he have gone on the open market, you know, not knowing what he was going to be like over the next 4 or 5 years? In this case, though, he's stuck on this roster at, about $1 million? I don't even know exactly what his contract is.
A little bit more than $900,000, yeah.
Right, right. So, I mean, he's not making much in the grand scheme of things as far as the NBA is concerned. So you wonder how much of that's going to be a factor.
Yeah, and... what does he think a good season's going to be? What's it going to take for him? What does he think it's going to take to get that big contract? Does he think that's just going to take all stats and blocks? So is he just going to keep going after blocks and possibly give up points at the rim if he's mistiming them? Or is he just going after points and he's not going to be happy moving the ball around in the offense? And is he going to be a black hole in offense? Or is he going to kind of see what these executives and coaches really want to see and him playing within a team and being the fixer-upper like we were talking about and doing all the little things that he needs to do as a center to really become a valuable, important part of the team? Or is he just going to be a numbers guy? And that's the answer that, you know, hopefully that he gets right. You know, we know what the right answer is, and we know what Eric Spoelstra is going to want, and we know what's good for the rest of the team because, you know, we talked about this last year. Those numbers are really great, but what can he do when he's not getting points? Can he be an impact player when he's not getting points or getting his touches? That's going to be the important thing for Whiteside. So I do have a question for you. We know that a lot of the season relies on Whiteside, right? Like, how good is he going to be?
Right.
How much do you trust him on a scale of not at all to trust him with your life? Like, obviously you don't trust him with your life, right? Like, what's that next, like, what would you trust him with? Like, your 401k? Would you trust him with that? Like, would you trust him with a child, a pet?
I would trust him, like, yeah, the child analogy is pretty good. Like, he can cross the street on his own. I wouldn't trust him to hold my car keys for me, you know? Those could wind up getting lost pretty easily, I think, if you give those to Whiteside.
So you wouldn't even let him be your valet?
Well, no, I mean, just even like if we were just friends, you know, like, okay, oh, hold my keys for me or something like that.
Right. Would you trust, okay, if you guys were friends, would you trust him to house sit for you?
Hell no.
No. Okay. Because he'd invite Future over and DJ Khaled and it'd ruin your house.
Right. I mean, yeah, that is a concern. Although, I guess if you have a house big enough where Hassan Whiteside can come and chill out at, maybe that's not as big a concern, you know, that if you're having a big, you know, rapper style party. It could be interesting, but to put a number on it, I'd say that if I was gonna, how much would I trust Hassan Whiteside? Is it, on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give him a.
Well, How much money would you let him hold for you?
Money.
Yeah, from $1 to $100, what would you be most comfortable with?
Well, at this point, knowing he's almost a millionaire, I suppose I could give him the full 100. It wouldn't be a big deal. I don't know if that analogy works.
Okay, $1 million or $10 million.
Damn! If I had $1 million, I don't know if I'm letting anybody.
All right, no, this isn't working, dude.
I think the point is that we're not sure how much we trust him. Let's say that we're not comfortable giving him full responsibility of anything, because he could think it's funny to throw the party, and then when you come back and there's naked strippers somewhere on your living room and everything's all torn up and the house is a mess, you go, hey, you know, WTF there, Hassan, why did you throw this party when I was just going to Publix to pick up a sub? And he's like, oh, well, sorry, I had DJ Khaled on the phone on speed dial and he said, yo, let's throw a party.
How long was that sub line?
Long enough to get the naked stripper, you know, to pass out after the party. I mean, I don't know how long it takes, but I'm going to go on a limb and say probably doesn't take that long.
Right. Well, that's the question. That's really the problem, right? Is how long does it take that? No. The problem is we don't know how much we trust Whiteside, and I think that Whiteside, you know, the best Whiteside could possibly be, right? And we still don't even know what that is, to be honest. But, like, good Whiteside and disgruntled, I'm playing for a contract, but I'm not getting the 20 and 10s every game that I want.
Yeah.
That could be, like, a 10-game swing on itself, right? Like, that could be a drastic. And even more importantly, that could mean the difference in a playoff series.
You have to hope that, you know, I think a lot of it's going to fall on Alonzo, and you wonder, they haven't really talked about it. He's kind of behind the scenes on a lot of things, even though he's in a lot of events where there's a Heat player here or there. So, you know, he's still engaged. He's always been fond of the public eye and the camera and everything else. So you wonder how much of a role he's played so far, but you have to think it's going to be a significant one, because somebody has to be there in Hassan's ear and tell him, settle down, big fella, you're going to get yours. Do what you do best, grab your rebounds, get your blocks, and the points are going to come. And then that's where you build the reputation of being a more level-headed, committed, and solid role player. And you'll still get paid. I mean, look at a guy like Damari Carroll. That's not a guy who's a superstar by any stretch. A very solid player in a very solid program in Atlanta. You know, they had a good scheme, and he was a big part of that, and they enjoyed quite a bit of regular season success. And he's a tough guy. He's a committed guy, and you saw that, and he played his role perfectly, and he got paid by Toronto. Now, maybe that's a special circumstance, but can't you see with the kind of need for rim protection in today's league and Hassan still being quick enough? I know there's a commitment or a fad of going small ball, which works, but a guy like Hassan Whiteside, still a valuable asset for any team. I think he cashes in big next year so long as he plays that role to perfection.
He's going to cash in as long as he doesn't completely implode.
Correct.
And if that's the situation, maybe it's not with the Heat, but he's going to cash in somewhere. You know, the Kings are going to give him a bunch of money or something, but or like the Brooklyn Nets will just pay him $160 million over 2 years or something. But you also, like, the Damari Carroll thing sounds good to you and I, because we're like, all we need from Whiteside is to play his role, and if he does that, his impact is going to be huge. But I think he looks at somebody like Anthony Davis, and he's like, I want what that guy's making. And he's going to want to put up numbers crazy like what AD put up last year, I think. And
that's a ridiculous comparison. I mean, he can't see the kind of...
I think he really thinks, like, the way he and Anthony Davis were playing, I think he thinks he's as good as Anthony Davis. I really do. I'm completely projecting. I have no idea. But just given what it looked like on that court, he wanted, and I like it, because he really wanted to be better than AD, and you want that competitiveness out of a big guy like that. But I think he thinks that he's as good as AD.
Well, if that's the case, then he's going to need to settle down and get a reality check. And then again, you know, this is where the team structure, the team culture that you and I have talked about on a countless number of times, you know, this is where it plays a major factor. Can Pat Riley find a way to connect, you know, at some point, even though he's older, even though he's no longer as involved as he has been in the past, can he go down there? And you know, we're always so careful when it comes to Whiteside, but you have to, you also have to, on the positive side of things, look at how he's always talked about this organization, the fact that they gave him a chance, the fact that when he screwed up last year after the back-to-back incidents with Alex Len and Kelly Olynyk, that he recognized that he made a mistake and he had to settle down. He showed a lot of commitment during the offseason. He recognized that he had to improve in some regards, and he's, for the most part, shown that maybe there's potential there for him to be the more mature player, and hopefully he won't be as disharmonious as we've come to expect, or as we might think he's capable of being.
Yeah, and at worst, Whiteside's still like a double-double guy. So he's going to be impactful this year. He's going to be good. He's going to be important. He's going to be a fixer-upper to some extent, but we need him to be there, especially for the playoffs. And let's keep going. Let's talk about some where do you see this team going playoff-wise? We've seen a lot of different projections.
It's the same thing, right? I mean, the same thing that we're talking about for the regular season could be applicable towards – are they good enough to be an NBA finalist?
I think the important thing is we keep talking about, like, how many games they're going to win in the regular season. I guess it doesn't matter because they're going to get to the playoffs. This team's too good not to. Can they gel in time for the playoffs? We almost want them peaking right in that, like, 60-70 game area going into the playoffs.
Where they close out March and April just beating up people.
Yeah.
The ball's on a string. Everybody's passing with frequency there. They're cutting to the hoop perfectly. Everybody's getting buckets. Everybody's happy, et cetera, playing their role to perfection. That's what you want. And it could very well happen. If that's the case, then I would say this is a team that advances to the Eastern Conference Finals, but I don't know that they can get past the upper talent level of a team like Cleveland.
Cleveland worries me. I'm not as high on Chicago as a lot of people are. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Hoiberg's going to be as a head coach. I don't trust a team with Derrick Rose making so much money. I don't know. I'm not a Derrick Rose fan anymore.
You don't know if he's going to be there for 82 games.
Right, and he's complaining about blurry vision, and I don't really know all this stuff. And, like, he's complaining about he's not getting paid enough now. Like, what was that?
Has he made that complaint? I haven't heard that.
That was, like, a month ago or something. Like, he was talking about, like, not getting paid enough or not being, like, guaranteed an extension or whatever. Like, he hasn't played in the last 5 years. Like, I don't understand it. That whole situation makes me anxious. What?
Are you referring to the comments that he made right before he got hurt? When he was in a media day, and he was talking about, you know, that he's worried about his long-term future or something along those lines?
I think he kind of said that he didn't think he got paid enough.
If he said something that specific, either I can't remember it or I've blocked it out on purpose, because you're right. I mean, there's a litany of things against Derrick Rose there that you can look towards and say, what the hell is wrong with this guy, considering that he was as talented as anybody, maybe in your opinion, maybe in my opinion, a little bit overrated at points there. Mm-hmm. But he was talented. You can't deny that. I know a lot of people want to criticize him badly. I've been critical of him, but he was talented, and the injuries have just taken away from his effectiveness overall, as you'd expect them to.
Right.
So when you're in that position, you can't really make comments about next season. Maybe they get overblown because he's such a – electrifying, polarizing figure, but I mean, he can't make comments like that anyway. So
overall, do you think the Eastern Conference is better or worse than it was last year?
Far better.
Me too.
Far better. I think so.
The Pacers are going to be better, right?
Yeah,
Chicago's
absolutely.
Going to be a team.
Yeah. I mean, you wonder
like
how much.
Knicks. I kind of like the Knicks in a weird way.
I fluctuate with them. I saw them playing, and it's like, I like Robin Lopez and what he brings. And you saw a lot more of him following the Trailblazers last year, and you know he was an impactful player there. So
I love Robin Lopez. He's one of the most underrated players in the game, in my opinion. And him next to his, like, he's just a fundamental guy. Like, he's just where he needs to be all the time. And him next to Kristaps Porzingis, who I watched him this preseason, he looks good. I mean, that guy is I don't know who this guy is. He's just another tall European guy that they're going to try to hope is Dirk, but he's not Dirk, and I don't think they're going to try to make him Dirk. They're posting him up and stuff.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, the guy's huge. Like, his wingspan's like almost 12 feet. Like,
yes.
All he has to do is just drop the ball in the net, like literally. Like, he's taller than the net. Like,
He looks to me like, you know, he's a little thicker down in the bottom, you know, area, and his legs and everything. But he looks like a defeathered pelican, you know, because he's all these long limbs and stuff like that. But then he moves with a ball in his hand, and he's smooth. You know, he finishes around the basket. He's got a nice short-range jumper. I haven't seen him connect on any threes, but I know that he's capable of doing that. He can dribble. He got past a couple of big defenders. I mean, there's potential there, and you're absolutely right. The team looks far better. They're not the kind of patsies that you can say, oh, geez, it's the Knicks. They're going to lose for sure. They're a better team than they were last year, for sure.
I'm scared of Porzingis. I mean, that guy can win games by himself. I think. Like, who was it that was covering? It was like, I'm trying to remember what game it was. Oh, it was Jared Sullinger. They were playing the Celtics.
Yes,
and Sullinger was all up in his grill, and he had his back to the basket, and he just did this. He just turned around and shot right over Jared Sullinger, like it was like he wasn't even there. And I was like, this guy's going to do that to everybody but Anthony Davis. Like,
well,
he's
I mean,
do that to everybody.
Sullinger is like 6'7" and kind of planted.
Yeah, but like Sullinger was at his hip. There was plenty of extra room there. Like,
right? No, I get you. I mean, you think that if you can think that he's going to sky over guys because of his length, but there's also concerns about his strength. Sullinger is the opposite of that, in that he could probably body him up pretty well and keep him away from the basket. But no, he got past him and just took the shot right over him. So that was impressive. I saw that same game as well. So there's
the only thing that worries me about the Knicks is that Derek Fisher is still the coach there.
Oh, yeah, he's not going to – I don't know if he's going to last or not. I just don't know that he's capable of taking whatever talent they have. And it's one thing when you look at the roster last year and you know they're not going to compete, and it's okay to have him there as kind of a lame duck coach. But in year two, when you've got Phil Jackson actually bringing in free agents, maybe not the big names you wanted, but good players like Robin Lopez and Aaron Aflalo, et cetera, you need somebody a little bit better. And I don't know that Derek Fisher is that guy.
I like Aflalo on that team, too. Because what team was he with last year? The Nuggets?
Nuggets, yeah. He got
then
traded.
That whole team quit on Brian Shaw, right? Like, they hated basketball by the time that season was over. And Aflalo didn't have a good year last year. But I think that the Knicks got him on a deal, because you can't blame him for not being good last year, because his whole team, like, just hated playing basketball last season.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to talk about there in the Eastern Conference. But you know what? Now that you mention it, what do you think about Boston? I'm kind of getting a little bit higher on Boston.
Me too. I liked what I saw. I watched like two or three of their games this preseason. And you know what? They're like the opposite of the Heat. They have like no names. Like, the Heat have a bunch of like number one and number two guys. And they have just like a bunch of like four, five, six men type players. None of them really need the ball, and they can all shoot, it seems like.
Yeah. If you haven't read it, and I'm sure you probably have, but for our listening audience, go to Sports Illustrated via the Cauldron, or follow Ian Levy, who we had on our podcast a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Brilliant writer, great guy, and he wrote a fantastic piece about the benefit of being average and how Boston just has a lot of really good average players. Maybe no superstar per se, but some really good players that are very good at doing a lot of little things. And that's an excellent example of it in Boston. And they've coached up that team. They've built a roster where they're really solid, and they work very hard, and they do a lot of good things well. And they could be a real threat. I mean, they challenged Cleveland last year, if I'm not mistaken. They were They were pretty solid towards the end of the season. They played very good defense. They had their own injury problems. And remember, they acquired Isaiah Thomas midway through the season, the same way we got Goran Dragic. And they looked a whole hell of a lot better than Miami did with Dragic. You know, say what you want to, but, I mean, that was a team that was capable of accepting and welcoming in Isaiah Thomas and running with it. And they did very well towards the end of the season. They were a threat there for a little while. So,
and then you have Thomas with David Lee in a pick-and-roll game that's natural and going to work. Like, you can run that as like your just go-to play, you know, right, in crunch time. Like you can score points off that. And then, like, they don't have any big names, but they have those things that you need in the modern NBA. Like, you have Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, just like, you know, dog defenders that are just going to defend the perimeter like crazy. They have a bunch of three-point shooting. They drafted two more three-point shooters. Yeah. You have, you know, big men that can space the floor, just a bunch of stretch bigs. The only thing they don't have really is a rim protector.
Yeah, but Amir Johnson is not the rim protector that they're looking for.
Exactly, and he's better than what they had last year. Like, he's gonna do things that matter. But I feel like put a rim protector on that team, and that's a good team. Like, that's a team that has like all those things that you kind of need to win in the modern NBA.
And it's perfect for Boston, that kind of blue collar, kind of real committed kind of team. I mean, they've got a team perfectly suited for that city, for that market. They're going to be really well appreciated, and they can challenge. Now, I don't know if we're talking about NBA Finals kind of challenge, but they could be a team that'll beat you up, even as they can only win a couple games in a 7-game series.
One of those make some noise teams.
Right.
I like the Pacers too.
Yeah. I was just going to bring them up. Yeah, certainly a lot more exciting, and end up. What's his name? Looks a lot better. Paul George looks a lot better. I mean, he's really come a long way from where you thought he'd be.
The main thing with them is if Paul George is going to embrace playing the four, and it doesn't sound like he's going to from his comments so far.
I thought he's finally come around to it. Yeah, okay. I mean, I know he kind of resisted at first. That was the buzz all around media day where he really flat out said, no, I don't want to play the power forward. But after a preseason of having done so and flourishing, because it's really just basketball. Who cares? It's all positionless at this point. He's doing what he's got to. He's getting past guys that are slower footed than he is. He's still being able to shoot over everybody. They're playing at a quicker pace because they got Monte Ellis there. I mean, it's a much better team. They don't have Roy Hibbert, you know, throwing the speed tax on the ground to slow everything down. They don't have David West there to slow things down. They're playing at a better pace. You're right in that they're improved. But it's the same thing. The Eastern Conference is so vague. You don't know where anybody's going to be. You know, Charlotte could be better, even though they have the loss of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. But they also added Jeremy Lin and Jeremy Lamb and Nicholas Batum and other players there. The Knicks are better. The Celtics are better. The Raptors, maybe even if they just maintained their status quo, they were still pretty good last year. The Wizards,
I think the Wizards are like the dark horse team to be really good. Like, that was my dark horse team last year, and I think maybe I was just a year too early on that, because John Wall looks fantastic, and Beal is healthy the whole year, and Marcin Gortat is just—he's been unbelievable. Like, his metrics for the preseason are like great.
Yeah.
Like, that's a team that, like, Nene is gonna miss some games. If they can maybe make a move, like, that seems to me like a team that makes a move in the middle of the year for like another stretch four power forward type guy, to really open up that offense and give it some versatility. That seems like a team to me that could really hit that like 50 win mark and be that second best team in the East.
They've certainly got some potential. I mean, you look at obviously you take away the 76ers because they are who they are.
Right.
But even the Magic have some solid players. Detroit is going to be better than they were last year.
I like Detroit this year. I like that little 09 Magic thing that they have going. I wrote a piece about them on Hardwood Proxism about, like, they just, Van Gundy found his Magic team. Like, they have Yersin Ilyasova as a stretch four, Hedo Turkoglu guy. They have Andre Drummond, and the Reggie Jackson pick and roll is going to be like the entire offense. And then just a bunch of shooters, Stanley Johnson, Joey Meeks. Like, they just have a bunch of shooters now. And that's enough. That's enough to make the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Like, if they get hot, who knows what they could do?
And we haven't even talked about Milwaukee, which a lot of teams are excited about. I mean, a lot of people are excited about this particular team. They've got some potential. Mm-hmm. You know, they got some good, solid players there. Nobody knows exactly how Greg Monroe is going to fit in that lineup, but I mean, they were a pretty good team last year. did Miami, was it Miami was 1-3 against them last year, I think? Yeah. I mean, they certainly had Miami's number, so that's
they were great on defense, and then they add Jabari Parker and Greg Monroe, two probably the two best offensive players now. So to kind of even that out, they're going to be good. I don't know if they're going to be like 50 games, like 45 games, like some people have been saying, but they're going to be good. And they got Jason Kidd coaching them, and you know how I feel about Jason Kidd as a head coach.
I'm sorry to hear it, but yes, you're right. I know that you're fond of his willingness to just abandon any kind of normalcy and just do whatever he wants to do.
Whatever the fuck he wants. It does not matter. It's like just five Giannis's out there. It's fine.
Yeah, well, they've already said that he's going to play all five positions, although he's going to play some of them badly. He's not an excellent ball handler by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah. Where do you fall in that argument? I know that we're getting away from Heat talk a little bit, but you know, I saw Matt Moore of Hardwood Paroxysm and CBS Sports talking about it. You know, there was some online debate after that comment was made. And some people, I guess more on the Bucks end of the spectrum, maybe Bucks writers or fans were saying it's great. They love him. They want to see him thrive everywhere. And Matt's point, a good one, I think, was that you're kind of stifling his development by kind of watering what he does down because you're getting him spread a little bit too thin. And instead of having him focus on saying, you're the power forward, you're the small forward, this is where you thrive, go at it, get better, and then you'll be the best player that you can be. Where do you fall on that argument?
Well, I think it depends on what you want him to be. Like, do you want him to just be like this ultimate glue guy that you could just throw in there and in as one of the five players on the court and just like, hey, we need a point guard, go be that. Hey, we need a center, just go be that.
Right.
Or, and just kind of make him like the ultimate like key to like unlock whatever it is that Jason Kidd wants to do.
Okay.
Or do you want him to be like a small forward type that just is a, like, he's got potential to be a lockdown defender. I don't know if he necessarily is, like a one-on-one basis. Like, he works within that scheme of what Milwaukee does, right? Like, where there's just a bunch of switching, so he never has to be one-on-one with any one particular player. Like, he doesn't have to be Draymond Green or Kawhi Leonard and just zero in on one guy. But he's got the same body. He's got that length, that freaky length that Kawhi has, that it's, like, the physical tools are there, so I could see why maybe you want him to just play small forward and just be a lockdown defender and then just, you know, get the ball and drive to the basket and Euro step where he can. But I don't know if that's what he's going to be good at. Like, you want to give it a shot, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I kind of feel like if he ends up being that, let him be that. But I kind of like this idea of just, like, let's throw Giannis at the wall and see what sticks.
All right, give me your two league pass teams, one from each conference. Go.
The Heat? Well, that doesn't count, right? I can't pick the home team because I'm going to watch every Heat game.
Nah, it doesn't count. All right. Another team. Okay, let's say – well, okay. You could hedge it this way. Would you watch the Heat every time not having to follow them or having any kind of allegiance toward them?
No. But
– right.
Okay. You're putting me on the spot here, but let me tell you. I think the Washington Wizards are my Eastern Conference team.
Division rival. That's cold-blooded.
Well, what's it gonna, you know, I'm not gonna be a basketball purist and say, oh, I'm gonna watch the Hawks because I love ball movement.
No,
I want to see John Wall just do John Wall things and Bradley Beal just hit a bunch of threes. Like, that sounds good to me.
I gotcha.
And plus, you also have the potential for what's his face, the coach. I'm drawing a blank right now.
Budenholzer.
No, the Wizards coach.
Randy Whitman.
You always have that crazy potential for him to like mismanage the last 2 minutes of a game and just completely screw it. So you have like the comedy consequence there, possibly.
Sure, we always have
that potential, so they're fun. And then I think in the West, you're making me choose between Boogie Cousins and Anthony Davis. But
I know where you're going with this. You're Kings man. You're already watching them.
I know, but I always kind of give up on them around game 25. And it's just like, this is too depressing to watch. Plus, they have Rajon Rondo, who I can't watch. Actually, you know what? The Kings are not in this. Rondo completely takes away all the good. Like, Rondo, I hate watching Rondo. I hate watching Rondo more than anybody in the league.
Not even watching Cauley Stein at the power forward? Is that enough to balance out the Rondo effect?
I just want DeMarcus playing small forward.
Oh,
that's not and point good. Guard. Just handling the ball. That's all I need. Like, take Rondo off that team, and I'm back on the Kings. But as long as Rondo's on that team, I'm boycotting the Kings. I'm also lying because I'm going to watch a bunch of Kings games. Because
I know you were.
But Anthony, I give it to the Pelicans.
The Pelicans is your league pass team.
We're about to witness a historic season from Anthony Davis. I think he's that good. I think this is going to be the year for Anthony Davis.
I think everybody's full of shit. I'm going to say it right now. I know he's going to be great because he's great. But are we going to see Jordan-esque levels of production? And won't we – like, we're in the moment right now where we are seeing Anthony Davis on the potential cusp of explosion or whatever the hell. But remember, you know, when you saw players like Jordan or Allen Iverson get theirs, there was always the fact that it's like, well, they're the best player on really bad teams. And looking at the injury situation here with New Orleans, I mean, sure, he can get 32 and 13 every game with 3 or 4 blocks. But what does it matter? They're going to win 30 fucking games because they don't have anybody else on that roster not named Anthony Davis.
You're right. Well, that's the problem with the Kings. That's why I love watching Boogie, and the team just keeps losing. So I'm like, well, Boogie does all this stuff, but it doesn't matter because they keep losing. So you're right. It depends on if Anthony Davis can single-handedly bring that team to a bunch of wins at the beginning of the year. That will make the league pass watch that much better. But if they're just losing, then I'm like, well, I could just look at his box score and kind of get the gist of it. But I don't know. What are your teams? I like Portland this year, too. I know it's the same thing. They're going to lose a lot of games, but I know I'm going to watch them.
In the Western Conference...
Oh, the Warriors, right?
No. I mean, I saw enough of them in the playoffs. I think that's got a good handle on them. Sure, I'm going to watch a whole hell of a lot of Golden State games, but they're going to be on national television so much, it's not going to really matter. As far as my league pass game, my flying under the radar team, I'm going to go with the Minnesota Timberwolves, man. There's enough youth and athleticism there, and you can't wait to see Kevin Garnett flip out and do somebody. I'm having a change of heart about him. You know, I've disliked him for a long time now, especially when he was with Boston. But now that he's the older veteran and not nearly the factor that he once was, and he's going to be playing every other third game or something like that, he doesn't bother me as much. You know, if he's going to go out there and do his crazy OCD shit and yell at somebody and get in somebody's face and sling an arm over Carl Anthony Towns and tell him where he messed up, I'm okay with that. I want to see that. I want to see Zach LaVine dunking over people. I want to see the greatness of Andrew Wiggins, who's kind of under the radar himself. I'm curious to see what this team does. And we should acknowledge, of course, that the passing of Flip Saunders could be what brings this team together and really guides them and takes them to another level than what you expect. There's talent there. There's youth there. No one knows where they're going to go, but that's part of what makes them interesting. And so that's what defines a good quote-unquote league pass team. You never know what's going to happen, but it could always be really, really exciting if it clicks, and that's what makes them an interesting team.
Rest in peace, Flip Saunders, for sure.
Absolutely. From everything that I've heard, it sounded like he was an incredible human being and a really decent guy. So best of anything to his family in this really tough time. But as far as the Eastern Conference is concerned, I'm kind of curious, and this is a slightly homerish pick, but I'm covering the Magic a little bit. But I'm not so bad. I don't feel so bad about covering the Magic as I once did, because they've got a lot of nice players there. They got some really talented guys on there, and I think it could be a really interesting group to watch.
Yeah, you have Oladipo, who third year now, maybe takes that leap to can score points consistently.
Yeah.
Alfred Payton, I love him. If that backcourt is almost the opposite of what the Heat have. It's like, we know they can defend, and they're going to do so on every play. But can they freaking score a basket? Like, we have no idea. So,
They've got Channing Frye. They get Nikola Vucevic.
Yeah, he turns into an actually good player that, like, starts protecting the rim and not, you know, being turned around and lazy on defense. Yeah, maybe he'll be good.
Aaron Gordon. Love him. He was ridiculous in summer league. I mean, and I know that was before the jaw injury, and it really took something out of him. I didn't know what to expect. I mean, he battled injuries in his rookie season last year, so by the time he came back, he was just kind of playing for minutes. No one really knew. You saw flashes of athleticism, and plus they were the Magic, so who cared, you know? But what I saw in summer league, I was floored. And I know you take summer league with a grain of salt, but it was still really goddamn impressive. So, and we haven't even touched on who some people think is the dark horse pick for the rookie of the year, Mario Hezonja. an electrifying player, a hell of a shooter. He can really put up some points. Not a bad team to watch. You know, you kind of discount them a little bit because they've been so mediocre and floundering for so long. But part of that was because they lack talent. I didn't even mention Tobias Harris, arguably their best player, and certainly
or
their highest paid.
Their worst player on any given night.
That's a possibility. You're right. But I think the floundering mess they were over the last few years was kind of an extension of Jacques Vaughn. No knock on him personally, but he just didn't seem very well suited for a head coaching position. He didn't get them to where they needed to be. Scott Skiles is not that guy. There's going to be a bump. Everybody knows this. They're going to be at least 5 to 7 games better, if not more, because of the commitment to defense. They're going to be a team worth watching. They're going to surprise some people. They may not be quite in the playoff consideration, but they might be close enough where you go, huh, I wonder if Orlando can make a push towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I like that team this year. They're going to be interesting. And Scott Skiles is going to be good for that team because, you know, it's going to be cool to see them with a coach again. Somebody that, like, talks on the sideline and communicates with the players and does things, as opposed to, like, Jacques Vaughn, who just kind of always seemed to have his arms crossed with one hand up to his mouth, just kind of, like, standing there trying to figure out what game it was that he was watching.
Wondering if he could still get home in time to catch the late night scores. Yeah, I mean,
I think is Scandal on tonight? I think it is.
Did I hit the DVR on that? Oh man,
I could text my wife. Okay, before we get to our favorite segment, cereal or not cereal, one bold prediction, Miami Heat related, for this season.
Wow, that is a very, very tough one. I think Justice Winslow is going to look like a lot more of a bust than people think.
More of a bust.
Yes.
Interesting. I don't like that one.
I don't either, but I feel that one somehow. I don't know why. I mean, I could be dead wrong, and I certainly hope that I am. There's potential there. He's shown, you know, great athleticism, explosiveness. I think he's going to be thrust into this weird situation where his minutes are going to be so off, and he's not going to be like the other rookies where he's going to have like a stable amount of time. And Spoelstra, so wildly unpredictable with his rotations. Some days he's going to go with Gerald Green, and Justice Winslow is going to be like three games in a row without playing. And we saw that with Shabazz Napier last year. You know, maybe they're completely different as far as their overall skill set is concerned, but, you know, rookies need playing time. They need consistency. They need to be able to build off something. And he ain't going to get that in Miami. So he's going to look really, really bad at some points.
Well, I don't like that prediction. And that was supposed to be a fun segment. But my bold
prediction. Did I say bust? I meant all-star. He's going to go in there.
Now we're talking. Yep.
the three-point shooting that was non-existent at Duke is going to be electrifying at the NBA level.
Justice Winslow wins a three-point contest. That's your
absolutely. And a slam dunk contest.
Wow. Without even trying. Okay.
Without even entering.
Right. Not somehow even entering. They're just going to give it to him. Those are great, but this Winslow kid in the three-point contest. My bold prediction is that Luol Deng doesn't finish the season on the roster.
That's an interesting one.
I think that this team is apt for a trade. And the reason I say that is not anything against Luol Deng, but it is kind of a branching off of what you're saying. Is Winslow as good as Luol Deng right now? No. But can he be 70 or 80% of what Deng is at a much cheaper price? Absolutely. Yes. So we sub in Winslow in that starting unit, and trade Deng for somebody that might glue this roster together and build this chemistry, a three-point shooter maybe, a 3-and-D kind of shooting guard possibly, maybe a backup center even, maybe he's a different small forward who's a better three-point shooter.
It sounds like you've got somebody in mind, Wes. Why don't you share with the rest of the class?
I kind of like Marvin Williams in Charlotte.
That's an interesting name there.
Yeah, just throwing it out there. No sources, obviously. We just run a podcast. No big deal. But it's somebody the Heat have liked in the past. He fits more, I think, of what they need. He's, according to the metrics, a better defender than Luol Deng is. But I think Michael Jordan is game to just say, the hell with it, that's Luol Deng, and maybe not care about the metrics. Jordan doesn't seem like a metrics guy to me.
But will he trade a UNC player for a Duke player? That doesn't seem like Michael
Jordan.
Oh,
I didn't even think about that. You're right. Never mind. Not happening.
Scratch it.
Scratch that. But somebody like that. Maybe like a Ryan Anderson, who's a power forward, but like a stretch four. Maybe the Pelicans need a perimeter defender. Maybe they do. They need a perimeter defender. Lou Aldang fits that. I don't know. I think that's my bold prediction.
They could look to package him maybe for like a team like Oklahoma City that right. needs some help on the wing. You know, maybe they could include him there. Maybe maybe get a guy like Andre Roberson, who's kind of him. He's a solid defender and his shooting is suspect, but I mean that's what he does.
Doesn't help the spacing issue though. That's the problem.
No, he does not. No, so we're taking a much better perimeter defender at this point. If our perimeter defense.
Andre Roberson just seems like Josh Richardson in 2 years, you know? Like, that's who Andre Roberson is to me.
I'd say Josh Richardson has a higher ceiling by far.
Okay, that's good. I'll take that. And,
yeah, no.
I don't know.
But what if you throw in... What if you throw a guy like... Okay, a package of Roberson, Kyle Singler...
I like Singler.
And maybe an energy guy like Mitch McGarry.
Yeah, but I like Mitch McGarry, but they won't do that because Singler's... he's like on a 5-year deal right now, right? Like,
yeah, 5-year, $25 million though. It's pretty cheap.
Yeah, I don't think Riley's gonna make a move for somebody that's A, white, and B, on a 5-year deal.
You're possible. Yeah, I mean it's absolutely a possibility.
But
there.
I like the Singler kind of guy. Like that's the kind of guy that we're looking for, right? Like somebody that could play small forward but more of a modern type.
All right. How about this? I mean, they got a clear space anyway. They can get Lou Aldang, and maybe they'll throw in Roberson and Steve Novak, who's at the end of the bench at this point.
I like Steve Novak.
He's still a hell of a shooter. He just doesn't get any playing time.
Yeah. I don't know. My issue with Novak is he can't play defense, and then how many minutes is he going to get over Gerald Green?
Oh, you go in there in special situations where you can run, and space the floor a little bit, and then maybe at the end of a close game, it's a possibility. It's something to consider.
Maybe Dang wants to go back to Chicago, and the Bulls trade Mike Dunleavy Jr.
No, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, me neither. But that's the kind of guy that they need.
Sure, exactly.
Shane Battier, Mike Dunleavy, basically a white guy that can shoot, which is like all the white guys, but can also play defense.
I hear Ray Allen is available.
You can't play defense.
Damn it.
They just need a guy that could do that. If we could trade Lou Aldang right now for Shane Battier, there's no question that we do it. Like Shane Battier 2012.
That was the best version of him though. Right. I mean that was amazing. He was doing everything there.
Yeah. That's who we
need. Anyway, let's move on to the segment that everybody's been clamoring for.
Right. Cereal or not cereal. For new listeners to us, because we haven't done this since we joined the Hardwood Paroxysm Network, right?
No, because our season's been over.
Right. So for new listeners, just figure it out. We're not going to explain it. Because there's nothing to explain. You're either cereal or you're not cereal. So, Wednesday, the Heat play the Charlotte Hornets. Are the Hornets cereal or not cereal, David?
I think the addition of Frank Kaminsky makes them cereal as hell.
Cereal as hell.
Yeah.
I Kaminsky so plus Spencer Hawes.
Ooh. You see, he's the anti-serial. And Jeremy Lin is surprisingly un-serial.
Lin is he's got that new haircut.
Yeah, that doesn't make him serial. That just makes him fashionably challenged.
It's like the most Asian haircut you can have is what he has. I like that he's bringing the Asia game to the NBA. I appreciate that. That haircut. It's a statement. Gilchrist is out. This team's cereal. All right. Friday. This team called the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I've heard about them.
We went basically this entire podcast without talking about the Cavs, and I'm okay with that because we're about to talk to them about them now. This team's cereal?
Well, who's in and who's out? Who's in and who's out?
Okay, in and out. Well, Tristan Thompson's back, but that whole situation, I feel like, okay, I don't like Cleveland this year because this whole agent and money thing and these all this money flying, like the whole J.R. Smith thing, remember that? Like where he wasn't getting paid enough and he opted and then he ends up getting paid less and he's not going to be happy about that. Like, I don't care that it happened 2 months ago or whatever. He's still not happy about that. There's no way. Like, I don't know. I feel like Matthew Dellavedova is going to hold out in the middle of the year saying he needs a bigger contract or something. And there's too much money stuff's going on. That whole LeBron thing where Rich Paul is like the overarching villain of the team. Like, I just, I don't like that. This team's serial.
I think they're actually not serial. And I'll tell you what, because I think it was based on from what we saw in that last season of the Miami Heat Big Three era, 2013-2014, where there was so much, you don't want to call it dysfunction, but there were definitely stressors. There were definitely issues there. There was frustration. You know, everybody's talked about that last year being so much more difficult because they just couldn't take the stress of trying to go to the finals for a fourth straight year, which they did, but they just didn't mesh. They didn't blend very well at times. There was frustration there, and eventually it led to LeBron leaving to Cleveland. I know there were other things drawing him back, but certainly that was a big part of it. So I think you're going to see some of that in Cleveland, where regardless of what might be going on behind the scenes, the product that they put forward is going to be a cohesive, solid unit. They're going to be a very good team in the Eastern Conference. I think they're going to be very, very scary to play. Mm-hmm. And I think Miami could knock them off. I think other teams in the East could potentially challenge them. But they seem so clearly above everybody else in the Eastern Conference. And I think LeBron's going to keep guiding them there. I think he's focused now. I think he's got his team built now. The kind of dipping the toes in the cold water of last season is over with. Now you got David Blatt in there. There's no concern about that. They're going to steamroll a lot of teams here, and I think they're going to be a very good team. But they're not going to necessarily be as fun, as carefree. They're going to be fun to watch. They're going to be electrifying at certain points, but they're not going to be as fun to watch. So I'm going to go with not serial.
Well, not serial is not fun, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's what I said. Wait, what did I say?
You said they were serial.
Oh, I meant not serial. Like, not, I agree with everything you just said, I completely agree with. Like, they're going to be good. They're going to be electrifying because LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, but there's going to be too much stuff going on, and absolutely, I just don't like all that stuff. Like the whole Rich Paul, the money stuff, like you're saying, all that background noise, there's just too much stuff. So not serial. We agree. Okay. I don't know why. I meant not serial.
Maybe I misheard you.
No, I probably missaid it. Sunday, Houston.
Ooh.
This team's very serial.
Very serial.
No doubt. James Harden, gotta love watching him. Why? We didn't even mention the Rockets on the league pass rankings. They're going to be the one Western Conference team, like, if we mention them, that would be actually a winning team.
I'm kind of scared of them, and I'll be honest with you. I think I gave them no credit last year. I thought at the beginning of the season they were going to take a dramatic tailspin. You remember that bullshit drama that started in the offseason with James Harden and Dwight Howard having lunch by themselves and kind of alienating the rest of the team, etc. I thought that was going to create like this really, really chaotic environment where everybody was going to be angry and really hate the two superstars, and I thought they were going to fall apart. What the hell do I know? They wound up coalescing and becoming this really, really great team that just beat up on people, and they went really deep in the Western Conference playoffs, and that was with injury issues to half their goddamn roster. I mean,
and
by
the game, what, within like a shot?
Yeah,
that weird comeback, right?
Yeah. I mean, they knocked off the Clippers. I mean, they got past Portland right in the first round. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were really good. They could have potentially challenged the Golden State Warriors if they had been at full strength.
And all of a sudden, playoff Dwight Howard is a thing,
right?
He's like, he's never going to be the Dwight that he used to be all the regular season. That's all we thought. And then playoffs roll out, and Dwight Howard's awesome.
Given all that, they're going to be a very good team. I still got to go with serial about them. I don't know. There's just something about there that's a little bit flaky, weird, different, and it works for them. Yeah, it works for them really good. And so I think they're certainly fun to watch and serialish.
Yeah, they're a good serial team. I mean, Harden's the best one-on-one player in the NBA. Ty Lawson's there now. Who knows what's going to happen with him? Mm-hmm. I love Trevor Ariza on that roster. I mean, last summer, they lose Chandler Parsons. Oh, what are they going to do? Ariza's way better than Chandler Parsons.
Yeah, certainly is.
He's like a Shane Battier guy. Like, that's the perfect person on that team. Dwight Howard was supposed to be the rim protector. Now he's just kind of a dominating presence at times, but really Terrence Jones has come along. Like, he's awesome. Clint Capella looked good at times last year, especially in the playoffs. I like Donatas Manehunas, whatever.
Montiunas, yeah.
Domo, whatever. Montrezl Harrell they drafted. He's a serial player. They have KJ McDaniels. That team's good. Patrick Beverley, yeah. he could take out your best player at any given moment and injure him for the season.
Yeah, just ask Thunder fans about that.
One thing I don't like about the Rockets is that Jason Terry's still on their roster. I don't like that.
No.
I don't know.
No,
you know what? I take back what I said. I hate watching him more than Rondo.
Really?
No, actually, I don't. I don't know. I hate both of them. You know what? I don't like Jason Terry's face more than I don't like Rondo's face, but I dislike watching Rondo's game more. He does everything I hate. Huh. And he's not even a good defender anymore. I don't like Rondo. Anyway, the Rockets are serial.
I don't know anybody who does. Yes.
The Rockets are serial. And those are the three games coming up this week. Charlotte, we said, was serial. Not serial.
So, Charlotte is not serial.
Charlotte's not serial. Too many injuries. They're not serial.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I went with Kaminsky making them serial, and you said Jeremy Lin makes them serial. So, Charlotte's serial.
Well, wait, no, I said MKG makes being out for the season makes them not serial.
Well, God damn it, Wes. This is our segment for all the new listeners. We're going to totally have to record this, although we're probably not going to. And so I guess you're kind of stuck with it. But the point is that...
You have Charlotte as serial because you like Frank Kaminsky as a serial person.
And yeah, did you not see that dance?
I have them as not serial because they suffered the one major injury of the offseason.
You're right about that.
I don't like that. I don't... Like, MKG going out for the year... Sad face. Sad face emoji the whole time. Cleveland's not serial.
Definitely not.
I really don't like the feeling of that team. I don't. Maybe I'm just wishful, but that's not good. And then Houston on Sunday, we both have a serial.
Yeah. Now, overall record projection over the next three games?
Weren't we supposed to have a soft schedule to start the season? Is that like after these three games?
It is, actually. I think it lightens up a little bit. And again, there's more home games coming up the stretch. So 1-2, right? Obviously.
Yeah. If somebody said the Heat would go 1-2 or play the games, which one would you pick? You can have 1-2, skip these three games, or play the games and see what happens.
Ooh. No, yeah, they need to get better. They need to play. So I would say play them, and if it winds up at 1-2, fine. If it gets better, you never know. I mean, they could, by the time Houston comes around, let's say Dwight misses time for whatever reason, and Harden's not as engaged, perhaps. Maybe they're coming off a second night of a back-to-back. I don't know what their schedule's like, but it could be enough to throw them off, or Miami might catch them on a bad day and really be able to capitalize.
I like that Houston is in Miami. I like that.
The Cleveland game, that's the one that's really concerning because, we had their number here, but they had ours there, so.
But there's always a chance to just go complete Miami revenge mode on LeBron.
No.
So those games are going to be close.
No, it's not.
It's not even close.
No, they're going to kill us. That's my prediction anyway. Okay. I think
2-1. I like this because you're asking me, do the Heat, who many are predicting to win 50 games, split the series between Cleveland and Houston? I'll say they win one of those games.
All right, go for it, man. I'll say
50% of those two games. I'm going to say 2-1.
I hope you're right. I hope we're both wrong, and I start off like last year when everything was perfect and Sean Williams was knocking down three-pointers.
We don't
and
have Neon Sean anymore. That's not going to happen.
3-0. 3-0. That was the best start of the season. We were like, man, this team is going deep. They're going to do it. This is incredible. Oh, no. The wheels have come off. Oh, that's too
bad. We really thought we found something with Sean Williams. Turns out it just needed like another 40 games, and we ended up stumbling on Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been fun talking with you and getting ready for the first few games of the season.
Shout out to Danny Granger just for being around. And then I don't think he's on the team anymore, actually.
No, he's not.
So, all right, never mind Danny Granger. All right, thanks for joining me, David. This has been the Heat Check. You can find the Heat Check on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. We're part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Network on Audio Boom, so check out all the great podcasts over there. Thanks for listening. Jumpin', them boys up to something. They just spent like 2 or 3 weeks out the country. Them boys up to something, they just not just bluffing. You don't have to call, I hear my dance like Usher. Ooh, I just found my tempo like on DJ Mustard. Ooh, I hit that Ginobili with my left hand all like.